I'm George Drake Jr., and this is Fifth in Ludlow, Part 1, The Letter Under the Bathtub.
So I was in college, and my parents were redoing their bathroom in the house I grew up in, which was a 1920s house. And the bathroom had never been redone, at least as far as I know.
That's my friend Tori Hollingsworth.
And I think my dad called me to just check in while I was in school.
I'm Frank Hollingsworth, this would have been March of 2008, so she would have just been a freshman at Chicago at the time.
And said that they had something strange happen while they were redoing the bathroom.
So I don't really remember where we were, but we were away on vacation and they had been remodeling the bathroom actually for some period of time. I am Kathy Hollingsworth, and we knew that both our contractor, Dave Reckworth, and our painter, Steve Young, were going to be in the house while we were gone, as well as some tile folks, because we were also tiling another bathroom floor.
Dave's loves Dayton history as well. And he says, you're not going to believe what we found.
There was a tub in the bathroom, a ceramic tub that was connected to the floor.
The tub was a cast iron tub and went all the way to the floor. So, it was hollow in the walls.
And they were ripping that out to put in a walk-in shower. And the contractor had found a letter that was poured into the cement underneath the bathtub.
And my impression is it wasn't encased in concrete. It was just sitting there in a void, between the walls, the interior and exterior walls of the tub.
And when we got home, Dave and Steve were all a Twitter about this letter that they had found and just thought that it was just really cool that they had found this letter when they had been breaking up the bathtub.
And they were able to actually open the letter and found that it was this note that seemed to be someone trying to meet another person under sort of strange circumstances.
And obviously, when they read it, it just became even more intriguing because there's so much that is not known and can be imagined just from the words that are on the page.
Did it fall there by accident? Who knows? But it was certainly a great hiding place for probably close to 80-something years. It was, nobody saw it.
This letter is kind of a part of the Hollingsworth family's folklore, a story they like to tell. It's something they've held on to for over a decade. It's raised dozens of questions. They spent hours speculating, but they haven't found any answers. I first saw the letter in 2014 or so, when Tori herself pulled it out when my wife Ruth and I went to Dayton, Ohio for a visit. It's written very firmly in pencil, in an almost cliche old-timey script, from a man named Will to a woman named Rose. I had Tori read what it says.
Whenever you're ready.
All right. Do you want me to read the envelopes, too?
Start with the letter.
Okay. Friend Rose, I got your letter, and I am well, and I hope... What do you think that says? I am well, and I hope... Something will...
What does that say?
Yeah. This will please you. Okay, I think I can do it now. Friend Rose, I got your letter, and I am well, and I hope this will please you, Rose. I will meet you at the corner of Fifth and Ludlow at Jenkins Drugstore at 7:30, and you and I will go to the home and go... And you and I will go to the home and go someplace to ourselves and talk the matter over. Hoping you will be okay. Hoping you will be all okay when we meet, if you are willing to do this and keep it to yourself, Will. And then it either says
boy, boy.
Bye bye or boy boy. Yeah.
Ever since they found the letter, Kathy and Frank Hollingsworth have kept it in a frame in their bathroom. They moved from the house it was found in, so it's hanging up in their new house. You guessed it, in their bathroom. After I'd seen everything in the frame and read the letter for myself, I could feel that there was a story that went beyond the vague and mysterious words on the page. And for the past 10 years, the Hollingsworths have been speculating and making up their own versions of what it could be about. I do that too. I hang on to things because of the stories attached to them, even if I make them up. I once had this quarter from 1969 that was completely brown. It could have been that color for any number of reasons, but I didn't spend it for weeks because I was convinced it was the mud from Woodstock, which just happened to take place in 1969. Things like the letter and that quarter hold memories. We may not be able to know what they are from the surface, but they're there. Everything in the frame was found in the Hollingsworth's former home in Oakwood, which is just south of Dayton, during a renovation in 2008, almost 100 years after the house was finished being built in 1927. Dayton around that time was a fascinating place. Leading up to the Great Depression, it was a city known for its engineering and innovation. Come 2008, when the letter was found, Dayton had been impacted by the recession. Manufacturing had moved out, and some parts of the city had seen better days, but the spirit of the people that put Dayton on the map in the 1920s could still be felt. On the right side of the frame are a couple of newspaper clippings that were also found in the bathroom, and the left side has the letter as well as two envelopes that were found next to it. The Hollingsworths say the newspaper clippings were part of a full newspaper page found wrapped around a copper pipe. Both of them are dated December 22, 1925. One of them is a long column about notorious con man Nicky Arnstein getting out of prison that refers to him as a distinguished-looking man with aristocratic hair. The articles establish more of a timeline than anything. They show that the house, specifically the bathroom, wasn't completed until December of 1925 at the very earliest. This will come into play in a little bit. The letter and envelopes weren't found around pipes, but flat underneath that cast iron bathtub. For being locked under something that had been holding water for almost a century, both envelopes and the letter too, for that matter, are in extremely good condition. They've browned, but they're not water damaged or anything. Nothing is smudged or falling apart. They tell a personal story, but the envelopes specifically lead to way more questions. The first one, first simply because of the date it was mailed, was written by Will, the guy who wrote the letter, with the firm pencil and curly script. The cancel stamp on it reads, Dayton, Ohio, July 20th, 10 a.m., 1920. Cancel stamps are still used today. It's that marking that defaces the stamp so it can't be reused. This envelope is sent to Mrs. Rose O'Connor's, Krug's Bakery, corner of Joe and Warren Street, in care of Oscar Gilbert, City. In the top left corner of the envelope is a different handwriting, a more standard script in deep brown ink. It reads, opened by mistake but not read, and is signed J.T. Schaefer. The second envelope is canceled with a circular stamp reading Zanesville, Ohio, September 7th, 6 p.m., 1921, over 1 year after the other envelope. The handwriting on this one is different than the other two on the first envelope. It's also in pencil, but it's written with a very light touch, and the script itself is much larger. It reads, Mr. Jim O'Connor, Mailroom, Union Depot, Dayton, Ohio. The entire left edge of the envelope is missing, like someone ripped it open from the side.
You've reached George Drake Jr.'s cell phone. Please leave a message.
Hi, George. Victor Peruta. I'm getting back to you about those letters. I will be back in town tomorrow through Friday the 13th and would be happy to meet with you during that time when our schedules converge.
Before we get into speculating what the letter's about, I wanted to see if we could cheat a little bit and just cut to the chase. Since I first started this project, my wife Ruth really has become my partner in this podcast, so she went along with me.
Hey,
hi. I'm Victor.
I'm George.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Come
this
on
is my
in.
Wife
hi,
Ruth.
I'm Ruth.
Ruth, hi.
Nice
come on
to meet
in.
You.
Thank you.
We got this guy, Victor, to help us try to figure out who these people were without doing any research.
Victor Peruta, and I'm a psychic medium.
We met him at his home in Cincinnati with a copy of the letter to see what he could find out. He used a method he learned in a forensic psychic investigation workshop, which involves tracing a person's signature. As Victor puts it, a signature carries the vibration of the person who wrote it, so things start coming to him when he traces it.
There usually comes a moment when you catch that person's energy, and then you could move into their energy and get information about them.
So that's what he did, with Will's signature at the bottom of the letter.
Okay. I see. Okay, I see. I see. I'm getting impressions. Okay, so here's what I see. I see a young man. He's wearing knickers and a cap. He's standing by a fence. He's looking at someone who's looking at him. The way he looks at this person, you could tell that he really likes her.
Victor revealed this information while looking through the gap between Ruth and me, gazing at the wall across the table in almost a blank stare, his hands waving and rubbing together. He established from Will's vibrations that he was young, poor, and to put it bluntly, Rose was way out of his league.
In other words, the woman that this is addressed to is in a higher socioeconomic level than this guy is.
Here's the thing. There's no shortcut with this. Ruth and I weren't convinced that his vision was actually the case. It seemed too obvious and was right in line with the speculation that most come to on their own anyway. Also, not to give too much away for the rest of the series, but he was way, way off. For Kathy and Frank Hollingsworth, it's the vagueness of the letter they found that's opened the door for so many questions and so much speculation. Here's what it says again. Friend Rose, I got your letter and I am well, and I hope this will please you, Rose. I will meet you at the corner of 5th and Ludlow at Jenkins Drugstore at 7:30, and you and I will go out to the home and go someplace to ourselves and talk the matter over. Hoping you will be all okay when we meet, if you are willing to do this, and keep it to yourself. Will. First of all, and maybe we're reading too much into this, but he doesn't use his last name. So it could be that they know each other well enough that he doesn't need to use it, or, and this is purely speculation, in case this letter did end up in the wrong hands, no fingers could be pointed directly at him. Also, the way he words it almost seems intentionally vague, like he's trying to keep the specifics away from prying eyes. The few phrases at the end of the letter especially, the talk the matter over and, of course, the keep it to yourself part. For Kathy and Frank, the big questions about the letter have been, what is the matter he references, and why does Rose have to keep it to herself?
I think that, you know, there's something, perhaps romantic relationship, perhaps, you know, maybe there was a child involved, who knows, that went on between Will and Rosie.
I suspect that there was, that Will and Rose had something going on that they didn't want anybody else to know about. Could be an affair, could have been anything, but it was certainly something they didn't want in the cover of the Dayton Daily News. Or the Dayton Journal Herald at the time, or whatever, wherever it was. It wasn't something they were looking to have publicized.
But it's addressed to a Mr. Jim O'Connor, and of course it's Rosie O'Connor who is the original addressee. So I think it probably, you know, is Jim brother, father, husband? You know, you just don't know what the connection is.
That story of an affair or a secret relationship between Will and Rose is the one that most people make up on their own. It's juicy, it fits with the letter, And besides, who doesn't like a good love story? It's even the one that I came to in 2014 when I first saw the letter. Part of me wanted that to be the story. Maybe just to be right, but I don't think it is. His letter seems too formal. If it were a love letter for a secret meeting, I think it would be more eloquent and less demanding. But maybe that's just me. Also, who hangs on to a love letter for a few years before just ditching it under a tub? Because the letter was found underneath the tub and not hidden in a secret drawer or something, the Hollingsworths also speculate that it doesn't necessarily relate to the people who lived in the house, but more likely the people who built the house. And it's with that that we arrive at the next round of speculations. If Rose and Jim didn't live in the house they were found in, how did the letter and these envelopes, dated 1920 and 1921 respectively, end up underneath the bathtub of a house that was finished being built in 1927? That's a pretty big gap. Remember, the newspaper clippings date the bathroom to 1925. So the other question is, where were the letter and envelopes for those 4 or 5 years?
Well, that's what I've wondered about, whether or not it's, you know, was it a worker that put it there, you know, it fell out of their pocket. Just the little bit of research that I did, I don't think any of those names show up as the original owners. So it could have very well just been somebody, you know, a worker that just fell out of their pocket and ended up underneath the tub.
The next thing they speculate about is the note written in pen on the front of the first envelope. That note by J.T. Schaefer saying, opened by mistake but not read. This could be a number of different things, according to the Hollingsworths, but they haven't come to any concrete, as far as speculations are concerned, conclusions. Is JT a man or a woman? Do they work for the Postal Service, or do they work at the bakery that the envelope was sent to? Why did they even open it in the first place? Frank doesn't have any answers, but he's also the first one to cast some doubt on Schaefer's note.
You know, open by mistake, but not read. And then the guy signed his name, and you're going, come on, you really, you didn't read this thing? So, I mean, you know, perhaps people weren't as, you know, we're more judicious in their, you know, this is not my mail, I'm not going to read it. So, you know, chances are, you know, they're fair that it's somebody didn't read it. But when you do read it, you go, well, it would have been hard to go see Rosie and have a straight face if you'd read that.
The final jigsaw piece is the cancel stamp on the second envelope. It's sent from Zanesville to Dayton, which Tori agrees isn't that close. Even today, it's still 2 hours away by car.
It was one of the earlier cities in Ohio, would have probably been a pretty thriving place in the 1920s.
But the distance isn't what's odd. They have no evidence for this. But ever since they found everything under the tub, the Hollingsworths have been under the impression that the two envelopes are connected.
The letter was in the envelope addressed to Rose O'Connor, and then that envelope was inside of this other envelope addressed to Jim O'Connor.
Oh, shit.
And Jim O'Connor is not the same person who wrote the letter, because the letter appears to be written by someone named Will.
This has been their version of the story since 2008. Tori's mom, Kathy, went into more depth as to how, in their minds, this could have played out.
You know, I'll even go to say that, well, maybe Jim O'Connor's her husband, and, you know, somebody wanted him to know about this, so the letter mysteriously got sent to him, because it was important, they thought, that they know about whatever Rosie and Will were up to, and that hopefully the matter got taken care of and life went on well for everyone. But, yeah, I just think there's all kinds of possibilities.
I went over those possibilities a lot. I made a list of who I needed to talk to tell the story fully and what directions it could take me. What I really wanted were answers. I knew ahead of time figuring some things out would be more difficult than others, so I was going to start with the basics. The Hollingsworth contractor found 3 things under the tub. A letter written from Will to Rose, an envelope addressed to Rose from Will, and a second envelope addressed to Jim from someone else entirely. So the question was, did someone really forward Will's letter to Jim a year later?
So lots of mysteries. And part of it, you want to understand the mystery, but you also don't want to dig too far into somebody's sordid past if it is that. It may or may not be. Who knows?
To see pictures of the letter, envelopes, newspaper clippings, and what the bathtub looked like, visit the website fifthandludlowpodcast.com. There you can also find the show on iTunes and other outlets to subscribe to the podcast. When you get to iTunes, please take a moment to rate and review the show if you could. Those stars and short reviews really do go a long way in getting Fifth and Ludlow heard by more people. Theme and other music used in Fifth and Ludlow is by Mustafa Shaheen. Logo and branding is by Peter Dechenko. This series is made possible by a generous grant from the Montgomery Arts and Cultural District with assistance from CultureWorks. Additional funding is from 91.3 WYSO. Episode editor is Katie Davis. Additional content assistance from Craig Shank and Ruth Reveal. Special thanks to the Hollingsworth family for their help with this episode. I'm George Drake Jr. Thanks for listening to Fifth and Ludlow. Next time on Fifth and Ludlow.
The way the tub was made, there would have been no way for somebody to... It had to go in there when the tub went in. There was no space for it to go in.
We went to take the bathtub out one day, and when they lifted the tub up, lo and behold, this envelope was in the under the tub, and it was just laying there plain as day.
Well, it fits.
It sure does.
It fits. It fits, and the folds
match up.